We are back in the book of Proverbs, chapter number 19, ready for verse number 2. I hope that you have your little notebook to annotate any of these that would be useful to yourself or someone within your circle of friends, because this book of Proverbs is a resource tool. These are intended to be memorized so that when the situations pop up, we have an instant response in our heart to the situation. So here we go, Proverbs 19, verse 2. Desire without knowledge is not good, and whoever makes haste with his feet misses his way. So when you want something, but you don't have a good reason, a good biblical reason for that thing, that's not going to go well, especially if you, like, push it. It's a very immature thing to want, and try to get it no matter what. I remember being as a little kid, you know, before Christmas came, we'd get the Sears wish book out, and we'd sit around and, oh, I want that, or I want that, or I want that. And sometimes we'd argue between the siblings, you know, about, well, you can't have that, I already claimed it. Well, that's not good to have that much, well, let's be honest about it. It's kind of a greediness, a personal greediness. And when we, as adults, continue that immature little kid attitude, and we even cut corners to try to get the stuff we want, we're missing the mark. We're missing the way of God. And so don't do it. Verse 3, when a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against he who is. Boy, I've seen this happen more than once. When a person of their own foolish, sinful, selfish choices gets themselves in trouble, then all of a sudden it's God's fault. Why did God do this? Why did God let this happen? When in fact, we could have told them it was going to end up that way. In fact, sometimes I have told them, if you keep down this path, it's going to bite you. And they won't listen. And so blaming God for your own free will, bad choices, is not fair or appropriate. Verse number 4. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted by his friend. One of our observational proverbs, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, a little bit of a sad frown, that when people have lots and lots of money or lots and lots of possessions, they got lots and lots of people that want to be part of their circle. But if you lose what you got, you fall on hard times, you find out who your real friends are, because the other ones kind of disappear. Verse number 5. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will not escape. Amen. That's the way it should be. When people bear false witness, they need to be called to account for it. When we lie or pass on lies about other people, we should be punished for that. We should be held accountable for our contribution to the false witness about other people. This is one of the reasons I tell people, don't you repost that stuff online until you've double-checked that it's accurate. And even then, do you really need to post this? Is it helpful to the person you're posting it about? Verse number 6. Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. Again, very observational proverb, isn't it? A person is being kind and compassionate, and suddenly lots of people come out of the woodwork looking to get a little bit of help. Sometimes individuals who make public donations to certain situations find themselves being sought out by others that would like them to do the same thing for them. And not all those people are legitimate. We understand that. And so just a reality of human reaction. Verse number 7. All a poor man's brothers hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursues them with words, but does not have them. Same idea that we saw from earlier. If you don't have any cash, you don't have any property, you have no power, suddenly nobody wants to be your friend anymore. And if you in your poverty, you know, you don't have enough, you start trying to say, come on, can't you help me out here? I'm in trouble. This is not my fault. I'm here by circumstances outside of my control. Can't you help me out? And they're gone. They're out of there. Because they weren't true friends, honestly. Verse number 8. Whoever gets sense loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will discover good. So we're talking about the pursuit of wisdom again here. Always well advised. Because it will have a long-term, positive, protective effect in our lives. Verse 9, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will perish. Boy, that was a quick repeat of that principle, isn't it? Keep in mind that the Mosaic Code said that anyone who lies in a court of law, whatever the penalty was going to be for the person they lied about, would be done to them. So if it was a financial penalty, they were the ones that paid the fine. If it was a corporal punishment penalty, they were the ones that were publicly spanked. And if it was a capital crime where execution was on the line, then the false witness could be executed. That's how bad false witness is. Verse 10. It is not fitting for a fool to live in luxury, much less for a slave to rule over princes. So a slave in this context is someone who fell into some sort of financial problem. It might not have been their issue. It might have been the issue of their parents or maybe of their community, their town, their city, their country. But a person in that sort of situation shouldn't be running the government. They shouldn't be in charge of princes. And so that's what Solomon is bringing out here. Somebody that's dealing with something from the past that was negative shouldn't be in charge. But before that, the main theme was fools, those that think that they know it all and they don't need anybody telling them what to do. Why should they be living in luxury? Because their foolishness, their self-centeredness, actually should be bringing judgment into their life. Verse 11. Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. So this is more of that slow to anger principle that we see in the book of James. You know, quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to become angry. That comes from wisdom. That comes from God's knowledge, from pre-programming ourselves with God's word, that when people do things to us, we don't just suddenly react. We don't kick back. We think about it. We apply the principles of God to it. So we count to 10 and check the word. Verse number 12. A king's wrath is like the growling of a lion, but his favor is like dew on the grass. So you can hear the negative and the positive here. If you were walking through tall grass and you suddenly heard the growling of a lion, you'd be scared, wouldn't you? Well, you should be scared when the king is growling at you for something you've done. But, on the other hand, if he's favorable toward you because you had done the right thing, that you were in the right on the case, then that's like that fresh dew in the morning during the summer months. It's just so refreshing and beautiful. Verse number 13. A foolish son is ruin to his father. We've seen this idea before, that kids that grow up to be foolish break the hearts of their parents. But now he mixes it with another family member. A wife's quarreling is a continual dripping of rain. Now, I believe this is the very first time that King Solomon makes a wife critique. And it may be an indication of the beginning of cracks in his relationship with all his wives and concubines. Remember, God had warned Moses to warn the people of Israel that whenever they finally did get a king, that the king was not to multiply wives to himself. Because the reason for multiple marriages in the ancient world, among royalty in particular, was because every last one of those marriages had some sort of contractual obligation. It was political. It was business-oriented. And God didn't want the king controlling politics and business by getting married over and over and over and over again. Because his principle from Genesis chapter number 1 and 2, chapters 1 and 2, was one man, one woman together for a lifetime. That's the idea. So it could be that after his many, many marriages, because my suspicion is that he's writing this probably between the 13th and the 20th year of his kingdom. He ends up with, 300 wives and 700 concubines. That's a lot of women that he has relationships with. And I'm not talking sexual relationships. I'm talking about interaction, interpersonal communication. And I think he has started to realize that was not quite such a good idea. Because many of these ladies had their own personal agendas. I mean, for their dads or their uncles or their brothers, you know, in other countries or in other businesses and things like that. And so they hassled Solomon. And so the reason I'm going into this in such detail now is because this starts popping up more and more. That a wife's quarreling is like a continual dripping of rain. It's like that torture of hearing that drip, drip, drip of a sink somewhere that needs a washer repair, or of something dripping outside off the trees or off of your eaves or something, and you can't quite get to sleep because it just keeps going and drives you insane. So, having a foolish son breaks a father's heart, breaks a mother's heart too, by the way. And having a quarreling wife, or for that matter, a quarreling husband, is going to be torture. So, what's the solution? Help your sons and daughters to be wise in the eyes of the Lord, and help your husband or your wife to be godly and to have a good relationship with them. Verse number 14. House and wealth are inherited from fathers, and that's a general rule of thumb, yes, but a prudent wife is from he who is. So a good wife comes from God. Verse 15. Slothfulness, so being lazy, casts into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Now that's something he brings up on several occasions when he talks about laziness, is that lazy people are sometimes motivated past their laziness by the fact that if they want to eat, they have to work. He who does not work shall not eat. That's in the New Testament, 1 Thessalonians, I believe, by the Apostle Paul. This is definitely a way to motivate people who are lazy. Verse number 16. Whoever keeps the commandment keeps his life. He who despises his ways will die. And his ways here, I think, is God's ways. The commandments came with blessings and cursings. And the cursings sometimes involved loss of life, execution, or you might do something so stupid it got you killed. So this proverb is about don't get yourself into trouble by avoiding and disobeying God's principles. You don't want to have the negative effects happen to you. So do the positive. Verse number 17, whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, who is, and he will repay him for his deed. So in the Jewish law, if you as a Jewish person became aware of another Jewish person that fell on hard times, and you had the wherewithal to help them out, then you were supposed to give them a no-interest loan that if they could pay it back, great. If they couldn't, you didn't worry about it. And here's the principle on that. You're really not giving the money to them. You're giving the money to the Lord, to his work. And so God will take care of it. And so that's the principle, is when we see people who are not being lazy, understand that. That's another part of the principle here. Somebody that's fallen on hard times through no fault of their own, helping them out is doing it on behalf of God, and God will honor that. Verse 18, discipline your son, for there's hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. The idea here is intervene at the lowest possible point in the situation. You take care of the littlest kids to discipline them because you don't want them to grow up as big adults and think that they can do anything they feel like, because they could end up getting themselves in trouble with the law and even being put to death by the law because they hadn't been disciplined earlier and learned that there are consequences to bad actions. And of course, the ultimate situation is that God may end up having to punish them, deal with them. And that's a more permanent reality. So the idea here is discipline your kids while they're young and maturing so that they don't end up being disciplined severely later. Verse number 19, a man of great wrath will pay the penalty. For if you deliver him, you will only have to do it again. Now, it's not just simply that this is a statement of fact, he's going to pay the penalty. It's the idea, should pay, must pay the penalty. You don't bail them out, so to speak. You don't pay their fine on their behalf. Because if you keep bailing this angry person out over and over and over again. Don't let them fear, don't let them feel the consequences of their bad choices. You've just started a cycle of repeat over and over and over again. I actually know of a couple of situations where parents have said, I had to do this with my kid. I had to tell my kid when he called me up from jail, and he'd been in trouble multiple times before. He wanted me to bail him out, and I said, no, I can't do that anymore. You have to learn that your choices have consequences. And it broke the parents' hearts. Understand that. But it was a form of tough love. And here it is again, being upheld as the proper way of dealing with it. Verse 20, listen to advice and accept instruction that you may gain wisdom in the future. This is repeated over and over again in the book of Proverbs, is we've got to listen and soak up God's wisdom. We've got to pay attention to counselors that are working under God's wisdom, because we need that infusion in order to make good choices. Verse 21, many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of he who is that will stand. So people have a lot of things that they think they can get done, and this is the way they want to do it. But the only way that you can be sure that something will get done properly is if you do it God's way. Book of James again. James tells the people that are saying, well, I'm going to go to this city, and I'm going to do such and such work, and I'm going to make this amount of profit over this amount of time. And James goes, you can't be saying that. You don't know what tomorrow brings, what tomorrow holds. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will go and do this or that. That's this proverb idea, is that we've got to understand we should be seeking first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and then all the other things will fall into place. Verse 22. What is desired in a man is chesed, steadfast love. You know, the fact that they care about other people, want what's best for other people. That's what we want to see. And a poor man is better than a liar. So a poor, truthful man who is seeking God's love, acting upon God's love, much better than a liar that gets things in an illegitimate fashion. Verse 23, the fear of he who is leads to life. Earlier we saw it as one of the theme verses. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Here, the fear of the Lord brings life. It leads to life. And whoever has it rests satisfied. He will not be visited by harm. So by having this relationship with God, God will take us through the situations of life. It may not always be pleasant. Understand that. But 1 Corinthians 10:13 applies. No time of testing has come upon any of us except that which is common to all humanity. God is faithful in that he will not allow us to be tested beyond what we are able, but with that testing will provide a way of escape that we might be able to endure it. So by having this fearful relationship with God, this wise relationship with God, we will get through the tough times of life. Verse 24. The sluggard, you know, the lazy person, buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth. Again, I have to laugh about this. My preacher from my teenage years, Larry Atkin, he would act this out. He would slump his own shoulders and take on that slouchy position in the chair, and he would mime out putting his hand down into a dish to get a big bunch of something, but he can't even get it to his mouth. He kind of leans down into it. That's pretty lazy, folks. And it forebodes a bad outcome. If you're too lazy to feed yourself, that's not going to end well. So don't be lazy, is what he's saying. Verse 25, strike a scoffer, and the simple will learn prudence. Reprove a man of understanding, and he will gain knowledge. The striking here is a legitimate government function. They use corporal punishment. And so this is the idea of this scoffer, this troublemaker. Their penalty was assessed that they would get how many ever strikes, how many ever swats the court had decided. And hopefully they would learn not to do that anymore. They'd learn some prudence from it. But they had to learn it through negative reinforcement. But for a man of understanding, just tell him, hey, knock that off. And that's all it takes. Hey, that's not right. That's all it takes. So you definitely want to be the second of those two. Verse 26, and probably where we're going to end up today. He who does violence to his father and chases away his mother is a son who brings shame and reproach. Now, this is a horrendous thing to think about. A son who grows up to despise mom and dad, even lays violent hands on them. Shameful, reproachful, and requires some sort of outside intervention to deal with that, because that can't be allowed to stand as proper societal behavior. Well, we'll mark our place and get back into the Word next time God gives us opportunity.